Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren, brought to you by MesquiteGolfPackages.com. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways here on Golf News Net. I am Mitch Lawrence in Myrtle Beach, the seaside golf capital of the world. Darren Bunch out there in California in Bakersfield. Glad to have him out there. And we will be joined, Darren, as we get started for what I think is going to be a really fun and interesting conversation with our friend Eric Hart.
Definitely. We're going to talk about lists and golf course lists and rankings lists and all kinds of craziness. Eric has put himself out there on Golf News Net with the sometimes controversial top 50 golf courses you can play in the U.S. This is his own personal list. We've got a lot to talk about, obviously. There are a lot of great courses on the list. There's some courses that some people have questioned. There's some courses that I question. But we're going to have a lot of fun. And you know, Eric has been on the show before, obviously. He's a regular. You can hear his Emergency 9 in the back episodes in our first 30 episodes that we aired. You can also hear episodes where he's talking about family fun and Florida golf, all kinds of different things. And you can read his work at golfnewsnet.com as he writes about all the different places he travels to.
And travel he does. I will give you his quick intro in just a minute. Before we do that, great that you're with us. GolfNewsNet.com, iTunes podcasts, Audio Boom, all of them. Places you can find us, Darren, on social media, at Getaways Golf on Twitter, at Golf Getaways on Instagram. You can find me at Mitch Lawrence, L-A-U-R-A-N-C-E, on Twitter and Instagram. And before we get rolling with Eric, we want to thank someplace. I know Eric is partial to this spot, too, as are Darren and I. MesquiteGolfPackages.com, our great sponsor for today's episode. 7 golf courses, including Conestoga and Wolf Creek. We will hear about them shortly from Eric. They've got a great variety of golf and gaming options. And Mesquite, Nevada, about an hour north of Vegas, definitely should be on your radar. And a great way to get to them, family-owned, locally operated MesquiteGolfPackages.com. They can put together the perfect trip for you. Itineraries of all shapes and sizes can fit any budget. Just go to MesquiteGolfPackages.com. Start planning your next memorable golf getaway
today.
There you go. All right, Eric, before we get to your top 50 list, I know you are partial to Mesquite because two courses are on your top 50, Wolf Creek at 17, and a special place to Darren, I know. I hate to bring it up. Conestoga, number 24.
Well, actually, Darren has much more problem with Wolf Creek than he does Conestoga, I can tell you that.
I'm mentioning it to him because of the match that you had.
Exactly, because it is the place that I beat you down with a final putt, I think, on the 18th hole.
Yes, sir. Yep, my great Utah trip came to a complete failure of an end in Mesquite.
Well, that's because it's a Utah trip that ended in Nevada.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but it's a good place to end. It's right next door. You can't do better than St. George and Mesquite, in my opinion, in terms of proximity in two states for great golf hubs.
Is that one of the reasons why you really, and obviously we're going to talk about a lot of other places, but Mesquite is a place that a lot of people might not think about when they, you know, they think Vegas and they just think big, glitz, glamour, the whole thing. But Mesquite is such a cool spot and obviously accessible.
I think if more people gave St. George, Utah the opportunity to, you know, to get out there and discover what it is, with all the people who go to Las Vegas and look out there, if they realize how great Sand Hollow was and just went up there, they'd have pretty much no choice but to stop at Eureka Casino and Resort in Mesquite for a night. And there, you do Conestoga or Wolf Creek, and you're always going to go back. It just takes one trip. And I think Conestoga and Wolf Creek are the two, you know, big name ones there, but you got to get out of the city a little bit more, and those three, Sand Hollow, Conestoga, and Wolf Creek, would make for a great weekend or two-day getaway from any Las Vegas trip.
Let's get to this top 50 list, and Eric, before we get started, I just want to let people know, in case they missed your earlier podcast, which, shame on them, It's the only thing I can say. The reason that Eric is such a valued member of the Golf Getaways team and has been on Talking Golf Getaways before and will again is because he is our ratings editor. He is an award-winning travel journalist. And I don't know, Eric, if this number is right now, but 368 courses, this is what I have, in 39 states and another, and this is mind-blowing, 42 courses internationally. Is that about right?
That's about right. I just added two courses I played with, Jeff Brower, Dallas National, and Cowboys Golf Club this last week. But otherwise, you're right on the money.
So that brings you up to 370, which
yes,
is
sir.
A good, it's a nice round number. You can find Eric at Mobile Golfer. That's M-O-B-I-L-E, Golfer on Instagram, and at The Mobile Golfer on Twitter. And be sure you do that. Always great information, great pictures, traveling by himself with his great family, his son Dylan involved often. So, Darren, let's get to this top 50s list, because it is not only fun, not only a great read with really interesting perspective, but it has become quickly controversial.
Well, I think one of the things is, you know, it takes some commitment to do this kind of thing. And obviously we applaud Eric for even putting together a list like this, writing all the capsules, doing all the work that goes into it. And you know that when you put it out there, you know, there's going to be some numbskull on Twitter who thinks that you're out of your mind. We didn't expect quite possibly some of the comments that happened early on or who they came from. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. But what I wanted to talk about first is, Eric, talk some about the factors that went into deciding your personal top 50. And of course, we're talking about the top 50 golf courses you can play in the U.S. So these are public access courses here in the country. You know, what are the things you're looking for that make you want to put something high on your list?
All three of us have a great deal of respect for Matt Janella of Golf Channel. And we follow everything that he does, as everyone should. He's a great voice for the golf community. And when he released his Golf Advisor Top 50 You Can Play from his opinion, it brought up a lot of conversations just among the three of us and our communities on, you know, the good points he made and the points that we question. And one of the things that Matt and I agree very much on is the emphasis on fun as perhaps the most important factor when putting these lists together. Yes, prestige is something. Yes, the variety of the layout and the routing is important. He loves walkability as much as you guys do and I do. It's something that we would love to have in every course. I tend to place a little bit more value on beauty than Matt does, but ultimately when it all comes back to it, it's memorability factor, which centers around fun. It's something that we've done a lot in putting our rating system together that we hope to launch here in 2017. And it's something that I think a lot of the big name publications pretty much ignore. They go after the big names. They give all the credit to the mainstay architects, and they ignore a lot of the great work done by, I call them lesser names, but I'm very familiar with them, like Jeff Brower, for instance, who's done a lot of great work in Minnesota. So I guess to answer your question, ultimately, like Matt, I put my primary emphasis on fun.
Well, and I think one of the things, too, that looking at some of the other lists that are out right now, I know that Golf Digest just released their top 100, and I had a conversation with a fellow podcast, The Fried Egg, about the fact that I just don't believe that list puts enough public access golf. It focuses so much on the privates. And you have something like, in that case, Monterey Peninsula Country Club gets on that list because it's a great Mike Strantz design, but it's also at an amazing location. Whereas architecture-wise, Tobacco Road is a far superior golf course hole for hole. And so, you know, a lot of different factors go into making these lists, whether they're our personal lists, whether they're the aggregate lists from a lot of different course raters. And certainly you've got a few on there that you've amped up the fun factor so that made it into your top 50. That doesn't necessarily, that's not the end-all be-all isn't fun. You've got to have a nice mix of all the different factors, including the intangibles of any golf course.
Yeah, absolutely. We mentioned Conestoga at the opening of this podcast, and I love that course, but its biggest knock is it's built through a housing community with houses lined on either side. It's got the Rio Seco effect, as I call it, where you can just imagine how awesome that course would be from every perspective. If you moved that out to the ocean, it would blow people away. But it's not out in the ocean. It's in the middle of a city project. And so the fun factor there is high. The variety was amazing. The shot value factor, hole by hole, you know, that was great. But the beauty gets a knock. So, yes, I do look at all those different categories and putting it in. And fun is, you know, a primary factor, perhaps as much as 30% in my own head. But I think, you know, when you look at the best courses that you can play, what makes a course so special to you? I think it's first impressions, because we all know you only get one chance to make your first impression. And it's how you felt when you walk off after that first round. Do you want to go back out there right away and play? Were you blown away, or was it just a meh, you know, whatever, I could do or do without it, you know, type of round? And you mentioned Tobacco Road. Anybody who plays Tobacco Road, their first time, they'll probably get eaten alive. But the second time they go out with it, you fall in love with it right away. Somebody asked me if it's a love at first sight course. Not for me, it wasn't. It beat the crap out of me. But my second time around there, I fell in love with it. So I guess the second date worked good for me.
So it was love at second sight.
Love at second sight, yes.
Let's talk a little bit about, and all this makes total sense, and the fun factor is one reason why we mentioned this controversial pick that Matt Ginella jumped on, and some other people too, but Pound Ridge in New York, which you ranked at 45 on your top 50 list, and that is ahead of Bethpage Black, which you picked at 49, Arcadia Bluffs, which you picked at 47, two courses that people will be familiar with, a course that, I love this, that Ashley Mayo called, I guess I should say her name because she put it up online, called Pound Me Ridge. That was what she called. That's how strongly she felt and how strongly other people feel about that golf course too, including Matt Ginella, or the lack of respect that they give it. Tell us why Pound Ridge and was picked that high above those other courses and why the fun factor figured into it for you.
Well, that's a great question, especially when you compare it to Bethpage Black, because we had somebody go on there and go off on me for making the distinction that they're both A-minus courses in my class, you know, as I classify them. And his contention was that how in the world can you possibly say they're equal courses? I don't tend to look at a course in my overall ratings as a course. I look at it as an experience. And so when I'm telling you the top 50 courses you can play, I'm factoring in the experience part. And Matt Ginella made a good point, even though he obviously had a different experience with Pound Ridge than I did, when he said, what did you do, never get out of the golf cart? And, you know, I laughed at that, admittedly, because I could understand it. Hey, I played Bethpage Black with a guy who claimed to be a 4 handicap, who shot a 118 from the tips. And I played the tips also because it was the state open day and that was the only option they gave us. And I shot a 101 with my 12 handicap. And he walked off and he said, that is the suckiest course he's ever played in his life. And I asked him, what made it so sucky for you? Because through two holes, you were 2 under and you said it was awesome. And he said, well, it just was set up unfair. Nobody could play this course like that. And I looked at it and I thought, hey, he put way too much emphasis on the score and not enough emphasis on what the course was. I happen to think Bethpage Black is a phenomenal course. It's just not revolutionary, I guess, in my head. I like the epic, as we'll get to with Wolf Creek. I like the ones where you walk off and you go, wow. I had that impression at Tobacco Road. I had that impression at Pacific Dunes. I had that impression at Wolf Creek. I did not have that impression at Bethpage Black. Whether that's fair or not, I don't know. But Pound Ridge, to me, was boulders everywhere. I love the story that the head pro said about how the only reason there were so many rocks left on the property was because Pete Dye ran out of dynamite. I love that vision. And I love the fact that, hey, I hit a perfect drive straight down the middle of a fairway, which I almost never do. And I hit a giant boulder in the middle of the fairway that kicked it out into the junk on the left-hand side, which you can't play from. And I walked down there, and I dropped my ball, and I hit three. And I thought, hey, that's great. If I'd have been 1 foot to the left, it would have been the perfect shot. I don't know. I don't tend to complain about cool and beauty. I tend to complain far more about the bland and the typical.
I think that's a good point, because everybody's got these golf courses, and we were talking with Mark Stewart from Tobacco Road, and he made a great point that, you know, there are a lot of courses in this country. If you played one, you played them all. And, you know, we have that feeling about some places. Harding Park, which we've talked about, is high on Matt's list and high on other lists that we see. And for me, I go out there and it's just like, it feels like another golf course. I understand it's good architecture. I understand that it has history and tradition, but at the same time, I walk off the golf course and I think, okay, I don't have that compelling reason to want to come back here. There was no shot. There was no hole. There was no something that really just magnetized me in a way and made me say, oh man, I got to get back there and try to tackle that again. That's what we're looking for. And too often, I think people just look at things like heritage and solid design, which there's a lot of in this country now, and they overlook the outstanding, they overlook the inspiring, and that's what we're looking for, inspiring design. And I think, you know, certainly with your list, you know, these are the 50 courses that inspire you, and you think, boy, I would love to go back and play those.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, when we walked off Harding Park, you and I got in the car, and the first thing we said is, man, that was a good burger. I can look at that several different ways.
Great review if I ever heard one. That says it perfectly.
When I got in the car after Pound Ridge, I could remember five holes right away that I wanted another shot at immediately, including that backboard par three that Ashley Mayo loves to hate. You know, it's it's one of those that just had so many different impacts on my mind. And yes, you could say they were sledgehammer impacts and that I, you know, was bludgeoned on the course. But hey, I had a beautiful day out there, played with great people. The service was spectacular. The routing was exceptional and, you know, unique. And hole after hole, I sat there on the tee box and took pictures and thought, wow, this is a course I can't wait to play again. And I was already only on the fourth or fifth hole, you know. I like that.
One of the other things about this, and I think we don't talk enough about the different reasons that people don't like golf courses. And one, obviously, we now established is bland, is the uninspiring golf course that might be a good golf course, but just doesn't wow you in any way. The other thing is just having bad experiences. And I think there is some bad design out there. And I think bad design is subjective. For example, you put Arcadia Bluffs at 47, it makes your top 50. I don't think it makes my top 100 because I feel like it's a golf course that penalizes good shots. In addition to some of the other issues with the experience overall that go into it. But, you know, talk about that idea that how the experience overall either makes or breaks a golf course for your list.
Well, that's a great question, because I remember at Arcadia Bluffs when we played that this summer, standing on that tee box when you and I both hit what we thought were perfect tee shots straight down the middle of the fairway, and watched the ball bounce, 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 disappear out of sight, and got down there, and both of us were pretty much in about the worst spot that you could get from down there. And I remember both of us debating, you know, the merits of that hole. And you can look at those results and that can be part of it. But I think, you know, the reason why I tend to emphasize experience over course itself is it's not just about a course that you play when you go back. The restaurant, the food service, the food and beverage service, the pro shop service, all of those factors are involved. We've all walked into shops where the people treated us like they didn't care we were there, just pay your money. And that instantly, before you even get to the first tee, can put a sour taste in your mouth. I like the places that even just walk up to you and greet you and say hi and smile and ask about anything just to kind of, you know, get things going off on the right foot. And I understand if it's busy, whatever, that's just one factor. But I do think the point that you were making about it being more than the course is the same point I'm making. I like to go the places where I feel like my presence is valued first and foremost. And then getting out there, you know, on the course conditions is one of those things that it doesn't really play a factor in my evaluation of a course, because you can play in the worst conditions, you can play in the best conditions. I understand that somebody experiencing Pacific Dunes for the first time, like we did in a 40-mile-an-hour wind with rain pouring sideways, can walk off that, you know, feeling like they never want to go back out. And yet we were so wowed by the experience at Pacific Dunes in general that we went out back later that afternoon and had perfect conditions and a perfect round and loved that. We had the same thing happen to us at Castle Stewart in Scotland. Went out the first time and nobody else wanted to go back out, and we forced a couple of people to go back out in the evening, and it ended up being the best round, perhaps weather-wise, of the entire trip.
Can I just interject something here to both of you? Why didn't we call this Top 50 Public Experiences You Can Play?
Because for the same reason that Matt Janella makes his emphasis on, you know, courses you can play and everyone else does, Matt also puts a primary focus on fun, but he's talking about the experience as much as we are. He's just saying, why should you go to a certain course over another course? And that's the same thing I'm saying. It's about courses, because you can go somewhere like, I would say Fallen Oak, where you get such A-list treatment in the clubhouse that you don't even almost want to go out on the course. And then you get out on the course, and the course is spectacular, but you go back in, and they've got a great 19th hole, stellar view. The guys are giving you pretty much everything you want. You've got everything taken care of there, and that's the experience side of it. But it's still about the course, Mitch. That's what I think. And just like what Matt's saying, you know, the experience is a lot, but the course matters. And Darren made that point with the bland routings and stuff that we play. We're not knocking TPC Hardin Park for being a bad course. Not at all. You know, I'm not knocking Arcadia Bluffs for its amazing views and for the really good holes that it did have. It's just, if you're comparing apples to apples, there are courses that blow it out of the water. And I happen to feel Pound Ridge does. And Darren doesn't, you know, he doesn't necessarily know that Arcadia Bluffs would make his top 100. It's not that he hated the course. It's that there are that many courses that are better to him.
Yeah, and I think this is a great, it's why this is a fascinating discussion anytime you have a list discussion, because I feel kind of differently. It's like when the U.S. Open was at Chambers Bay, and the announcers kept, somebody would hit a drive down the middle, and then they'd say they hit a perfect drive, but it ended up in a bad place, and I went, they didn't hit a perfect drive, because on those holes, a perfect drive is not down the middle of the fairway. So you guys hitting a perfect drive at Arcadia Bluffs and getting down there, and it's in the worst spot possible, it wasn't a perfect drive.
I can see that.
Do you know what I mean? It's so subjective in terms of, I have personally a lot more problem with a purposeful big boulder being left in a spot on the golf course. That to me, a course with that stuff will never make my top list, because to me it's a conscious choice on the part of the architect to say, okay, here, I'm leaving this big thing here, now deal with it. There's tons of golf courses that are like that. A lot of them have Pete Dye's name on them because he's one of those guys that says it shouldn't be fair. I mean, that's his philosophy of golf. It shouldn't be fair. He has said life is not fair, golf is not fair, the golf course should not be fair. He doesn't believe you need to have an open fairway, and I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that my own personal opinion about courses, unless you play it, if you're a member at a private course that has a big boulder in the middle of the fairway, then you play it often enough to know that that's not, forget the boulder, it's not a perfect shot.
Yeah, I think that's the point, Mitch, and that if those types of things are being used to defend the golf course, but there is a way to play around it that is a reasonable expectation, mm-hmm. and a bad golf shot puts you behind it, that's one thing. I think the other side of that is just putting those things in for visual effect where they get in the way, you know, then that's probably bad design. Our argument at Arcadia Bluffs obviously was you stand on the tee, you feel like this is the spot you need to hit it. And you get there, and because of the way the fairways are sloped, you know, a drive ends up in a vastly different place. Now, that happens all over the place. It happens in links golf. But the difference is, in links golf, there's usually a lot more width to be able to still play from those shots, even though you're in a different spot or not as an ideal spot. Whereas some golf courses that use those slopes to extremes end up putting them, you know, your ball bounds then into a much less playable spot, and it can kind of ruin the experience.
Right, I get that. So, I mean, I haven't played there, but what you're saying is that there really is not much of an option but to hit that drive, and then chances are it's going to bound toward that area anyway.
Exactly.
Well, that's a whole different, yeah, of course.
You can lay up 150 yards short of that slope and then play it as an extra stroke and go for bogey. But I don't think that that's proper hole construction.
Right. I totally agree.
One other thing I wanted to answer about why don't we call this a golf experience ratings is that, you know, Eric was doing this on his own, doing it for his fun, putting together a top 50 list. Golf Newsnet obviously is going to put together a golf course rating system that will launch later in 2017. And we're going to do exactly what you suggested. It is going to be called the Golf Experience Course Ratings because we will come out with the full system. We'll detail all the categories so that it really shows that, you know, fun, how fun plays into it, how beauty plays into it, how architecture plays into it, how playability plays into creating that final number that helps people kind of, I guess, compare and contrast between golf courses. Because I had somebody ask me, B.R. Kahneman from Kemper Sports one day, we were having dinner, and he said, what I want to know of the top 100 list is, what's the difference between the course that's 56th on the list and the course that's 58th on the list? And we've kind of put this system together. Eric has spearheaded it. We've refined it for a couple of years in a way that when we launch that, which will be our official Golf Newsnet rating system, you'll be able to look at it and see, well, here is where the true difference lies between these courses. And maybe for me, the course that's at 56 isn't as good as the course that's at 58 because I value some things differently. And other people are going to value other things differently. I know I talk to guys who architecture is all they care about. And they want to play long golf courses, and they want to play immaculately manicured golf courses. And like Eric said, manicuring and conditioning, it's completely happenstance when you're a course rater. If you only go to a course one time, you might get the worst time or the best time with conditioning. So it's really kind of folly to even think that you can rate something like that accurately for a course that you don't play 5, 6, 7, 10 times.
No, I totally agree. And I think that's why the experience ratings is going to be great. We talked about this a lot on the, you know, with Colin's great bus trip around Scotland. We were constantly talking about this particular way of ratings, but it's great. It does, and it brings in so many other things into play, all of them subjective by whoever you're talking to. So I think it's a great way. Let's move on a little bit, talk about a couple of the other courses. And Eric, I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Sure.
Because there's so many courses, obviously, if we spent 2 minutes on each, that would be a 100-minute podcast. We're not going to do that. So quick hitting. Let's just mention a few of the other ones that you rated in the top 50. Give us a couple of quick thoughts on them and we'll move through it. Bandon Trails was number 44. Obviously, the Bandon experience brings a lot into play.
The interesting thing about Bandon, and we've discussed this before, but to loop it back in, all four of those courses out there, all four of the championship courses, are just otherworldly. All of them could easily make the top 20 of anyone's list. But we all have our own orders of how we put them. You know, I go back and forth every day between whether I like Pacific Dunes or Bandon Dunes better. And I think it's razor thin, the margin between them for me. Darren feels similarly about Bandon Trails and Old MacDonald, you know, and with those two at the top of his list, who knows how everything else stacks up for everyone else. But Bandon Trails, to me, I know Shane Bacon loves Bandon Trails. I know lots of people love Bandon Trails. It just, maybe it's my game for that day. Maybe it's something else. I love the course, but I was so much more wowed by the other three and ended up with just way more courses in the world that I would play before that one and that I thought personally were better courses. I mean, the interesting thing to me when these things come up is I always wonder at what point, you know, one person becomes more of an authority on greatness than another. You know, does someone's fame or platform, bigger platform, make their opinion more right than mine? I don't think so. I don't feel the same. I feel the same way about mine versus someone else. That's why we love the lists. Darren feels that way too. You know, I know we feel that way. We love lists. We love the discussions. But, you know, we're not out here to attack other people for what they put where they put it. We just want to stir the conversation. And Pound Ridge did that. You mentioned Bandon Trails being where it is, but I know the Loop in Michigan is another one that's going to stir it up. I know Ross Bridge being as high as it is one that's going to get people's attention. And I know Wolf Creek and my number one course are both going to stir people's discussions up. And that's kind of what they're there for.
You know, the reason I found Bandon Trails interesting at 44, for all the reasons you mentioned, and we just had Shane on the show, and he was talking about how much he loves it. But it's that it very well might be hole for hole the best Bandon design, but it also doesn't have some of the other things that you value in terms of it doesn't have the same kind of beauty. It may not have the same kind of fun factor that maybe some of the holes at Pacific have, or certainly, in my opinion, some of the holes at Old MacDonald have. And that's all that goes into it, and that's, again, what we keep talking about. That personal experience you feel when you come off the golf course and where that fits into your own personal list of places and in what order you would go back. You have a course at 36, the Bullet Pinehurst Farms. I've seen people online and on Twitter talking about, hey, that's a pretty cool golf course. I don't know that I would play it more than once is what I hear people say oftentimes. And so, you know, talk a little bit about that one and where it is too, because I don't think most people know the Bullet Pinehurst Farms.
Well, that's a great point that you bring up, especially you, given that the owners, Dave Bachman, when he was doing all his exploring, he wanted Mike Stranz to design his course. And they went out to Tobacco Road and they studied all that work out there. And he came back with a certain vision in his head. And if you called Dave Bachman up right now and asked him what his favorite course in the whole world is, he would say the Bull, but then he would say Tobacco Road. And his whole emphasis on it is on presenting somebody with a unique experience that you can see hole after hole. It's like a smaller Tobacco Road is what I feel like. It's got a lot of shots that you really have to think about before making. And that's why I rank it as high as I do. I see a lot of the TR factor in it. I see a lot of Mike Stranz in it. It is the only Jack Nicklaus signature course in Wisconsin. And, you know, some people hate Jack Nicklaus's work. Some people love it. I happen to be right in the middle. His greens are super tough, and that's how most of them are at the Bull. But his course is very well thought out, and he obviously knows what a golfer is going into. And I think that when you look at the Bull next to the other courses that are in the area, the four courses at Whistling Straits, yes, the Straits course is by far the best course out there. It's one and there's not even a number two. But if you got down to the next one, it would be real close between the River course, who, you know, architecture aficionados love, and the Bull. And then you'd have people throwing Erin Hills in there, which I don't know. Sand Hills obviously belongs in that conversation, or Sand Valley, sorry, belongs in that conversation. And, you know, I like the fact that when I play the Bull, which I have a dozen or so times, every time I'm out there, I know I can play it a different way. There's so many different angles to every hole, and it very much feels like Tobacco Road to me.
All right, so let's keep going. You've got French Lick at number 29. It's a course that a lot of people, including myself, have yet to play. but I'm really looking forward to going. It's another one that's gotten, you know, it has both sides of that coin. Tell us why it's so high on your list.
French Lick is interesting because I loved that course and yet had one of the worst caddy experiences I've ever had in my life out there. And I always wonder how much that impacted my love for it. And I remember walking off that course and going out to take pictures and walking around and just truly appreciating the course itself on that walk around much more than I did while playing it with that numbskull. So, you know, from my standpoint, I think it's a brilliant piece of landscaping on a terribly difficult piece of landscape. And give Pete Dye credit for the insanity that it took to pull that off. It's amazing driving up there, and it's amazing looking out over the course. But I can see why people would hate it, and I know there are some that do. I just don't. I love the views, and I love the fact that I'm hitting so many shots off the edge of the world and watching them come down on a fairway somewhere.
Well, I think one of the things about your list, and we should say that, you know, not everything is crazy controversial on this list. When you look at, there are people who are going to question your number one course, and we're going to keep that a secret. If people want to go listen to your Emergency 9 or make sure they go read the post on the website. But when you look at your 2 through 6 in your top 10, I mean, that's a pretty well-received list by most people. You've got Bandon, you've got Pacific, you've got Whistling Straits, you've got Pebble, you've got TPC Sawgrass. Those are courses that people love and pretty widely accepted as being top 10 golf courses in this country. But you've got a lot of ass kickers on this list, and I think that speaks to you and what you like as well and what makes things memorable. You know, you've got obviously French Lick, which we talked about. Pound Ridge was one we talked about. You've got Wolf Creek at 17. You've got the hardest of the golf courses at Hammock Beach at 15. You've got Cascada at 13, which is a desert rocky bonanza, basically, that Reese Jones designed that we're all big fans of. But it's not the easiest golf course. You've got Mauna Lani South instead of the North. You've got Chambers Bay, which has its own reputation at number 8. So, you know, talk a little bit about just the why the ass kickers make it memorable for you.
Oh, wow. I think that's a pretty deep psychological thing.
Hey, Darren, let me remind you of something before Eric answers that. This is the same guy that nosebled all the way around Tain.
And a few other courses.
This is why he likes ass-kicking courses. He's a warrior out there who goes out and says, okay, it's me and you, and pretty much focuses, this is my hit. We can get deep and psychological if you want, but it's pretty much the thought of, I'm out here, this is the challenge in front of me, I am attacking it. And let's see who wins the attack. It's either going to be me or the architect and the lad. Am I right, Eric?
Yeah, I mean...
And here's another thing that I think I just thought of. Fun means different things to different people.
Sure.
Fun is not just to me, which might be, here's my flask on the first tee, and I'm going to laugh a lot. That may be my fun. Your fun could be a bull rider has a different sense of fun than I ever would.
And an unnamed person called me the 50 Shades of Grey as a golf raider person. That's the kind of sadistic treatment. Exactly right.
Yeah,
and you know I don't mind a good bludgeoning. I actually appreciate them in different circumstances. But you know, I don't know. The biggest butt whooping I took all summer long was up at Gray Walls in Marquette with Darren, and I've never hit so many good shots into greens that turned out so terribly. And that's one of those courses that I went into thinking would be top 10 in my head because I love those psychotic, sadistic courses that just didn't even get there. Even though I love DeVries' work, I just, you know, that one didn't reach the same level as these others. And all the ones that Darren listed off, the Wolf Creek, I mean, a lot of people would throw Tetherow into that conversation too as a butt kicker, you know, and I don't know. I like going out to a course. You could say you can look at them in a little bit of a different perspective. I can go out there and say, hey, if I shoot less than 200 on this course, I did really good. I don't know. I enjoy artists and architects who try different things. Darren referred to me once as somebody who likes Pablo Picasso like golf courses. And, you know, that's not that far off. I have a great appreciation for the outside of the box. I mentioned it on Twitter yesterday. You know, Mike Stranas is my favorite architect of all time. A lot of people hate his work, and I don't get that. And I had a great discussion with Jeff Brower on that in Texas. And he's like, hey, I picked some great things up from Stranas. You know, he's not for everybody, and he definitely isn't. A lot of people hate Arnold Palmer's work, and Arnold Palmer has a course at Deacon's Lodge that's top 16, number 16 on my list. And a lot of people wouldn't even consider that for their top 100. But I don't know. I like the toughness factor. I like toughness more from a course management perspective than a length perspective. I don't have the longest game in the world, but I like making the tough shots. And I like standing on tee shots or on tee boxes and in fairways, knowing that this is all risk reward. And the more risk reward I get in a round, the better I feel about that round a lot of times. Because, yeah, I mean, I may only pull off 50% or 10% of those shots, but I love taking those shots.
I think one of the things, too, to mention here is that in contrast to, I'm guessing, and I haven't played with Matt Janella, although I've traveled with him a few times, but someone like Matt or someone like Shane Bacon, who we've talked to on his Emergency 9 about the fact that he's playing the golf course as long as he possibly can, you're playing most of these golf courses, with the exception of Bethpage Black, you're playing most of these golf courses from a more realistic length for the average golfer. You're playing them from between 6,000 and 6,400 yards, most likely, maybe 65. And I think that makes a huge difference on some of these golf courses and probably might be an explanation for why you enjoyed Pound Ridge more than some people do who try to play it from the tips. I talk to people all the time about Tobacco Road, and they can't take it from the tips, even though it's only 6,600 yards. You know, they find themselves in all kinds of trouble because they can't manage their game. They don't have their own – their own expectations of themselves are way too high. And on the flip side of that, we go play it, and we play it from anywhere from 5,500 to, you know, 6,000 yards, and we have an absolute blast because the architecture is there for that kind of a player to have a good time. And I think that's probably a huge point that we need to make. You know, and certainly when we do our golf experience ratings, you know, that's going to be one of the things we point out that, look, we're pretty much a group of raters who are playing this from average lengths. We're not going out there to, you know, try to put up, 63s and 65s, although that would be great. We're the guys who want to play a golf course of realistic length and hopefully break 80 if we can.
I think that's a great, great point. A great thing to bring up right here because I know you've had these conversations with lots of other people, and we've discussed it at great length, too, about how too many people go into a round looking for a number, a specific number. You know, they go out there and they're thinking, oh, I've got to play 6,500. They're not thinking about different courses being different courses. They're looking at that number, and, you know, you've mentioned several times writing that article about you suck more than you think you do, you know, that whole philosophy, and I agree. A lot of us are going out there playing it from a set of tees that isn't maxing it out to the greatest difficulty. So we will have a different appreciation on it than others. But, you know, you've mentioned about Tobacco Road, and I think I read or heard Ryan's from Golf News Network, his take on how he loves to go out and play a course short. Loves to go out and take those shots that you don't get to play in a normal round. He'll take that any day, you know, over going out there and just killing himself. And that's a great point. It's something that we wish more people would do. I, for one, definitely do.
Yeah, Ryan's quote is, until I go out and shoot 54, I'll play from as close to tees as I want to because there's always the challenge there. The challenge is going to be there. And honestly, I think playing golf course from shorter adds to the challenge in some cases because it really does make you manage your game and makes you think about what you're going to do. And, you know, we've been places, Royal Dornoch's that way for us. People love it. It's a bucket list course, and it should be for people. It's historic, and it's beautiful, and it's got some amazing golf holes. I think the architecture of it is very good, but it's also a very difficult golf course. And, You know, we played it from as close tees as we possibly could, and I think Mitch played it from even one tee box up, and, you know, even then it was an ass kicker for us. You're just trying to get, you're trying to find that comfort level of where the golf course is for you to play it, and I think sometimes in our rankings we don't take that into account enough, that people who truly want to go out and have fun are playing from a lot of different yardages. And the mark of true great design is that you can play a golf course from 5,500 yards or 6,800 yards and have it be an enjoyable experience for golfers of all levels.
All right, a long time ago at the beginning of this podcast, this discussion all started because of a top 50 list by Eric. And you can tell why these lists are great, because the time has flown. And think about all the things we've discussed relative to golf and golf course design and experience and everything else. So clearly this could keep on going, and it will, because all three of us are involved in this particular part of the game. But I'm going to shut it down now, man.
Mitch, can I throw a couple things out before I leave?
No, I'm sorry. You're done. It's like being at a bar and saying you're cut off. I'm kidding, Eric. Go ahead.
I just want to wrap up a couple things in comparison basically between, you know, Matt's list and mine. Darren pointed out about my top 10, you know, for the most part being very solid and courses that others would agree with. Matt and I have 18 of our top 50 the same. And if you look at it and break it down even more, you know, he has 20 courses on his top 50 that I haven't even played. And I would guess that there are 10 or more courses on my top 50 that he hasn't played. And that's where I ask the question, where does one person's opinion matter more than another? And the experience factor kicks in, you know, the travel factor. There's 16,000 courses out there that we're all trying to play as many of as possible, but we can't all get to. And if we do get to them, we might only get to play them once. So the fact that most of us only have this one shot at it, we're going to remember it different ways. Darren just brought up the great point of distance. How if some people go too far back for them on that day, or if they treat a course that should never be played at 7,000 yards like a course that they typically play at 7,000 yards, that's completely different, their experience is going to be dramatically affected by that. If somebody took Pound Ridge on at 6,900 yards and I took it on at 6,200 yards, yes, we're probably going to feel differently about it. So I like the fact that all those things were brought up in there, because those are things that the Twitter people need to pay attention to, and other people need to jump on and realize that there's a lot of commonality out there from list to list between people who have played 300 courses or more, like many of us in these evaluations have. So my greatest respect goes out to Matt and the conversations he started and other things that he's been kicking on, because he's got courses he loves. His number one ranked course in Minnesota doesn't make my top five in Minnesota. I appreciate his perspective, and I want everybody else to kind of open their eyes to things they haven't. When my number one course comes out and everybody sees it, there's going to be gawking, squawking, and all kinds of talking, hopefully, and that's a good thing, because I believe that course merits far more conversation than it gets. And if putting it number one is what it takes to get more people to get up there and experience it, then my list was successful.
Well, bravo. And I think Darren would agree with me when I say, next time we have you on, we hope that you'll be slightly more passionate about this than you have been right now. No, kudos, man. I'm with you. I know Darren is too. And there's going to be a lot more discussion about it. That's all I can say. Thanks for all the work you put in getting this top 50 list out. If you want to find it online, golfnewsnet.com is where you can do it. Eric at Mobile Golfer on Instagram, at The Mobile Golfer on Twitter. Great stories. Go there, read all his work about a whole bunch of different things other than the top 50. And I know you want to find out what his number one course is that he's talked so much about. Darren, thanks. I know we'll get together again soon. Thanks to all of you for listening to us. Time for some Tom Petty. We've been talking about top 50s. Go run down your dream. Take it away, Tom Petty.